This is entitled Using Agile with Qualy Olay, a retrospective. I'm Bruce Taggart. I'm the Vice Provost for Library and Technology Services at Lehigh University, and we're one of the founding partners in Olay. And I'm pleased to introduce our panel today that'll, you know, tell you about Agile and the implementation of Olay. The speakers today are Robert McDonald at the very end, Associate Director for Library Technologies and Digital Libraries at Indiana University, Bloomington. Tim McGeary, he's the Library Systems Manager at Lehigh University. We have Christine Shannon to my left, Agile Coach, Kay Shannon Associates, and Mike Winkler, who is the Director of Information Technology and Digital Development, University of Pennsylvania. Robert, it's all yours.
All right.
Thanks, everyone, for joining us so early this morning. And thanks, everyone, for online for joining us. I know they're streaming it out today, and we're really happy to have you. But, boy, the lights here that make us look good for you online, they're pretty intense. So my name's Robert McDonald, and I serve as Executive Director of the Qualy Open Library Environment. And just wanted to point out a couple things to you. Well, I think it's a little better, the QR code on the other one. But if you capture our QR code, it'll take you straight to our slides if you want to grab those while we're going along. Also wanted to point out that that's the only place to evaluate our session this time is online, and it'll take you straight to our page for that. And that's the page for the tweets if you're online and want to ask some questions. I'm monitoring it up here so we can capture those as we move along. I also wanted to point out you can follow us on Twitter at Qualy Olay, and you can also follow our new blog, Qualy Olay at Tumblr.com, which is starting to have some nice media content that we're putting up there as we move along to show the progression of our project. But a little bit about our talk today. The main function of today is to really talk about the Agile development process that we kind of modified and put in place with how our group works. So what I'm going to talk about is a little bit about the Qualy Foundation, the Qualy Olay, and a little bit about why we went with an Agile coach to kind of set up the communications process to really help us improve our overall software development. And then I'm going to turn it over to Christine, to Mike to talk a little bit about that process. And then Christine's going to talk a little bit more about our user story component of that. And then Tim's going to talk about taking that user story into a functional specification using the Agile methodology that we have. So just a little bit about Qualy Foundation. How many people have heard of that and know what Qualy Foundation is? Show of hands. Pretty good. Great. So I won't delve too much into this, but the main reason that we joined the Qualy Foundation with the Open Library Environment was we were looking for the kind of foundational support that you would need for a long-term application, a 10-year type of support. We really liked their mission because it was enterprise-wide IT software that was built for higher ed, by higher ed. We liked the community-sourced approach. We liked how the investment process worked from that, from the founding partners of each application buying in for that and building a governance board. We liked the open source component and the educational community license that everyone uses in the Qualy Foundation. And we really like the fact that we can get the services we need from the centralized 501c3 type of entity that the Qualy Foundation provides, you know, and it's very cost effective for us. Now, this is what Qualy is not. It's also what Qualy Olay is not. We've done a lot of these talks to folks who are looking at new library systems and they want to see if Qualy Olay will work for them. And, you know, a lot of times they bring us in an RFP kind of process and they're like, don't you want to put in an RFP? Well, we're not a vendor, we don't have a sales force, and we don't really solicit or compete for RFPs, but we do go talk to people when they're in that process to let them know what we're about, that we're not a vendor, that we don't have a sales force, but that we are creating some great software that could help them out if that's what they're, you know, if that's the way they're interested in going. So just a little bit about the foundation's current applications. Of course, the original one was the Qualy Financial System. The other one that's recently really come on board is how we've taken the COAS Research Administration System and retooled it to work within the Qualy framework. The Qualy Student System, which is just now starting to get some of its modules into place at key partner sites. Of course, there's us, the Qualy Open Library Environment. The Qualy People Management for the Enterprise is one of our newer applications. and Qali Mobility, which really just got launched this summer. And in fact, we just put it into place at IU, and I really like how that's going. In fact, one of my next things is to get the library's stuff kind of tied into that. And then, of course, Qali Ready, which is one of our software as a service applications. It's been out there for a bit, and we use it both at IU. We also use it with the HathiTrust Digital Library. A few more goals about the Qali Open Library environment. Our whole goal was to be community source. We wanted to build a framework that not only would replace the current library management system, but that would give us the flexibility to move to next generation types of technologies. We wanted to re-examine the library business operations, especially as we're moving much more from a print-centric to an electronic model, and break away from workflows that were really based around print models, models, so that we could really take a look at how libraries are going to offer the next generation content and how we can integrate with different enterprise level systems, whether it's a learning management system to provide context to that information resource, or whether it's a student system that provides context for the courses the student's in, how can we direct them to better information. A little bit about our founding partners, just to give you an idea who's there. Of course, you heard from Bruce at Lehigh. Indiana University is a partner, the University of Maryland, Duke University, North Carolina State University, University of Florida, the University of Pennsylvania, the University of Chicago. And we actually got some seed funding from the University of Michigan, who's not an implementation partner, but they really were interested in the model we were taking forward. So they provided some well-needed funding for us to get started. And of course, none of this would have been possible if we couldn't have gotten the matching funding that we got from the Andrew W. Mellon Foundation. And that really helped us enable the type of process we wanted to do so that we could hire a software development firm to do a lot of the development we needed to do in the first 2 years to get our core software package together. And this is a little bit about how our organization works. We have an Olay board built from those partners. Our project manager, Brad Skiles, is based out of IU, and his whole core technical team there in the blue work directly for him. Then we have a functional council and a technical council. And the functional council, that's really what drives this project. They drive in the specifications that we need to be developed in the software. The technical council is representatives of all the technical areas from our libraries. They vet the technology, make sure it's going to work with the current systems they have, and see how it's going to interoperate. And then we pull tons of subject matter experts in to really help us with the specification writing. And those come directly from our libraries. And in fact, this gives you a little closer view of the core team and our project manager. We've had some great consulting help from folks who really have built out Qali Finance, as well as Qali Rice. And then you'll see over here HTC Consultants. HTC Global Services won the contract to develop our core software. And of course, they have onshore and offshore resources, and those all feed directly back in to the project manager. But when you really take a look at this, is, as of a few months ago, all the people who are involved. And when you get down from the first level, those really are subject matter experts from our member library schools participating in and driving the specifications for the product. And just wanted to point out, everybody's always asking me, how can I find out more? Can I send someone to find out more about any piece of the Qali application stack? Our user conference is coming up November 14th through the 16th in Indianapolis, and this is the first time that Olay has a full track there, and I think we're going to have some really good stuff, not only about our software product, but we've got some of our friends who are developing a product called Archive Space, which is going to be an open source archival management system. They're going to be there talking about some of their stuff, and then the rest of the Qali stack will be there. We have pre-conferences and some really nice stuff going on. And with that, I'm going to turn it over to Mike to talk more about our Agile process. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Robert, and good morning to everyone here and online as well. Thanks for coming out. So just a little bit about what our goals were as we got started with our project and how we wanted to adapt Agile methodology for development into our project. So we really liked many of the things that you can get out of Agile, the short turnaround. Rather than waiting months and months and months to see software, we really wanted to get quick feedback on the specifications that we were getting and being able to see things in code. We really like the idea of collaboration between the stakeholders, people who have a lot at stake in this project, of being able to understand how the software is going to work, This being driven by Kuali Rice is really based around workflows. And we understood right away that a lot of our workflows were going to be changing. So we needed to have those functional people, the people who really are the managers in our libraries who are purchasing the materials and describing them and circulating them and loaning them out, really needed to understand what was going to happen as we began implementing Kuali Ole. So getting them involved early was very important, but also they surfaced lots of things that need to get done in the project that would be a little bit difficult to figure out. You get this idea of, oh yes, we're going to do circulation. You know, people come to a desk, they present a book and an ID, and they walk away. That's relatively easy to specify, but when you talk to your circulation people in libraries, they'll tell you that there's lots and lots of edge cases that need to be dealt with. So we really need to get that collaboration going between the stakeholders and the developers, and we like that idea a lot, as it's expressed in Agile methodologies. The ability to get quick turnaround on the code also allowed us to see prototypes and validate whether the specifications make sense or not. So we wanted to be able to get code back quickly and to test it against our assumptions of how the entire system was going to work. And then finally, a focus on the functional software itself. Rather than on the technology, we really wanted to focus on the workflows. And Agile methodology lends itself to that. But we had significant hurdles for this. As Robert pointed out in his slide, we have eight primary partners who are involved in this, spread out across mainly the eastern US and into the Midwest. We are fortunate in that all of the partners except for Chicago were in one time zone, which makes scheduling a little bit easier. But the core team, the functional council, the board, the technical council, and then our developers end up being spread literally across the world, even into India. So we had some real challenges with the geographic distribution, being able to get together only occasionally and having to figure out how to get together virtually was one of the issues that we had to work through. Because of that, we had really proxy stakeholders. It was difficult to have the stakeholders be right with the developers. It's hard to imagine how the functional council could have been meeting frequently with the developers. So the core team ended up being a proxy for us, that we talked a lot to them so that they could understand the processes that we were talking about. We would work with the core team to develop our functional specifications. And then they're working with the offshore developers in a much more agile configuration, including morning scrums and those sort of things. We also have many stakeholders. Again, having eight partners is challenging because although many of the processes that we are worried about are very similar, there are always differences. And in fact, I like to joke that if you look up exception in Wikipedia, there's a picture of the University of Chicago there because they seem to always have the one, you know, use case that is just diametrical to everyone else. And then we had some architectural uncertainties. As we were building the system, we didn't want to build the same systems that we had been using for years. This required us to look into some unique and somewhat exotic technologies for library automation systems, including things like document stores and content management systems. There were some learning curves involved in that, learning how to use the Kuali financial system, which is embedded inside of Kuali Ole. Became quite a challenge because it is a full financial management system. And then learning Kuali Rice as well to handle workflow. So to mitigate those hurdles, those challenges that we had, we played around with our organization several times now. Things that have become consistent throughout this, though, are we have weekly web conferences. We've all gotten very good with the technology and have become comfortable working with each other remotely and virtually. The functional council meets once a week on Thursdays, the technical council on Wednesdays, and we vet agendas and get our work done. Tim will be talking a little bit more about some innovations that we've done as we've gotten closer to our first public release. That really are aimed at increasing our velocity. Our core team, as I said before, does daily scrums with themselves and the primary stakeholder. So they meet every morning for about 15 minutes, and they review where they are and what burdens they're having in the development of the code or the specifications. And then later in the day, they have a daily scrum with the offshore developers. So we have time-shifted people who have changed their schedule so that at the beginning of the day they can come in and have a scrum with our core team. And then finally, product owner visits. So about once every 6 to 8 weeks, the product owner, which is represented by the chair of the functional council, that's myself right now, Tim McGeary is coming on as a co-chair. We'll go out to Bloomington, visit with the core team, and just work through architecture scope questions, any problems we have with the organization of the project, priorities that might be shifting, those sort of things. So it's been very helpful to have those face-to-face meetings. And I really just wanted to finish up my part here of talking about the importance of FaceTime in adapting Agile to what we're trying to do, is that we have found it's really critical to get together, that as much as you can do virtually, the intense close time that you have face-to-face really makes a difference for project management and for managing how the direction of the project or the trajectory is developing and dealing with the problems that come up along the way. But it's also really important for this group bonding idea that you know, you have to come together as a group and form some trust and really be able to rely on each other and know that people are not working at cross purposes or that their agendas are open and known to all of us. So it's very important for the group to come together and get a sense of that. So there's nothing like putting people in a room pretty intensely for 8 to 10 hours and then going out for drinks and dinner afterwards to build that. And it's also really good for these special activities that are just best done in person. It's difficult to emphasize enough how being able to do a little horse trading when we're trying to develop our pool of subject matter experts, or SMEs as we call them, in developing our Tiger teams, which are rapid response teams that really are aimed at helping us maintain our velocity for creating functional specifications and testing and accepting the software, and for grooming the backlog, or going through the user stories, which I'm going to ask Christine to speak about.
Hi, and I'll thank you again for joining us. I'm Christine Shannon. How many people have experience with Agile? Oh, great, okay. And how many people are familiar with user stories? Okay. I'm gonna talk about the process of how the Qualia OLE project team got ready for the development and how they created their backlog and everything came together and how we did that first grooming. So they had a great team of folks, a whole lot of people that organizational chart that Robert showed that had all those people at every university, every institution, every partner. Some of the partners even represented a group of institutions. So there was a whole lot of people that had a lot of experience, and they were all coached really well in creating user stories. So they all submitted together 1,244 user stories. So they kind of turned on this for a while, had a big spreadsheet last summer of user stories and said, okay, where do we start? What do we do with this? And some of the challenges when they came to me and said, you know, we need to figure this out, they had just different degrees of detail in the user story. So some of them were really granular, some of them were really broad concepts. A lot of duplicates because institutions each submitted their user stories themselves, so they had folks that did the same job at different universities saying, we need to do this, but they were different wording or different, they said the same thing but had different words. And they knew that there were duplicates out there, they just didn't know where they were. They couldn't get their arms around that. They didn't have any kind of high-level grouping. Everything was given at a user story level without qualifying it to a greater business process. So they had no kind of these are this group or this is this group. They didn't start with like, here's the tip of our iceberg, let's break it down. They had just this mass of pieces of chunks of ice everywhere. They had no priority among that whole, 1,200 plus, and really no idea of the complexity of each of them. And ultimately, they just didn't know where to start with that. So we looked at that and decided that, thinking of that iceberg, how do we figure out where that tip is? Where do we start? And if you think in Agile, looking at, you want to be talking about the most near-term stuff, because you know that you're going to know more when you get to 3 months or 6 months down the road. You're going to know more than you do today. So you don't want to spend a whole lot of time talking about what you're going to do 6 months from now, because you're going to know more then. So you wait till 6 months. So you kind of, as you're looking at your backlog, you want your time focused on your closest things that you're working on. So that's the idea of prioritizing. So we decided we'd set these goals together. And they had a user story committee and a chair for that committee, Kristen Antleman with North Carolina State University. So Kristen and I got together and said, okay, what goals do we need to do? And Robert and Mike had kind of set us up with this too. We wanted to organize the backlog. We wanted to organize a spreadsheet of user stories. Find the duplicates, find anything that's the same, find similarities. And then we also determined that they had done a lot of business process mapping. They had spent a lot of time with those SMEs doing high-level process mappings and then sub-process mapping. So they had business processes. So they were able to take that knowledge that they had and mash that up to user stories fairly easy with those SMEs. So they were able to do a lot of that. That gave us those high-level groupings. Then we wanted to prioritize, and we wanted to order that backlog. We wanted to know where to start, and we wanted to create a roadmap of what really would be that iceberg. What is it that they're going to be able to, what is achievable, and what is the order that's going to make the most sense as they gain knowledge through this product development? So as a few things that we learned right away was that we wanted to do face-to-face time, and Mike talked about that too. That really, there's so many folks involved and so much distributed. So we said, where is it at all possible to get face-to-face? So I'll talk about where we capitalized on some time last fall to do this, to make our way through the user stories. Having that face-to-face time was key. We used index cards, so we got out of the spreadsheet. We said, okay, we've got this spreadsheet that you can't get our arms around it, so let's go back to the basics, the user story basics. Let's get an index card, get the user stories. And Kristen, we printed out 1,244 user stories on index cards. And then we used, for prioritization, we used what's called a Moscow method to do must-haves, should-haves, could-haves, and would-like-to-have. So we learned right away in the capture user stories that some of the user stories were things that were maybe not something that was going to be release one. We knew, or maybe something that was never going to get done. It was what they were doing in their current business process, but not what the vision of Olay was supposed to do, was meant to be. So we knew that there were going to be some of those out there too. And we use distribution dots for prioritization. So this is maybe a common thing when you have a group, but it worked really well. It's a good agile technique, and it worked really well with this group because it allowed everybody to have a voice and an equal voice in prioritizing. So it wasn't voting. It was a way to give everybody an independent, unique voice. So distribution dots are where you've got, everybody's got an equal set of dots, and then they use their dots as a vote. So you stick the dots on the cards and say, okay, this is where I think it's most important to me. So say you have 20 cards that you're voting on, each person would get, say, maybe 10 dots. We kind of learned that it was about half as many dots per cards based on the number of folks we had. And then those, everybody would dot up which ones they thought were most important user stories. And then we used the number of dots to order those. So the three, we ended up iteratively and incrementally going through these workshops. And we kind of, after each one, said, okay, here's the next time we can meet, here's what we need to do. And we learned from each one. So we started in October and did a small workshop at NC State. Kristen was able to host it. And we did a little lead-up time, so the user story committee did that business process mapping to the user stories, which was awesome. So that at least gave us categories of user stories. So the 1,200 got broken into, I think, 5 or 7 groups of different business process areas. So we had volunteer experts. This was where folks that were on the user story committee, they weren't part of the functional council. They were a little bit more at the day-to-day business level, knew what needed to be done. And they, I consider them like the stealth team. They came in day and a half, and they just were awesome. They went through all those 1,200 cards. We'd lay them out on the table, a table similar to this size. All the tables had wheels. We were wheeling tables around. We were sticking them up where we could, up on boards where we could. And they went through card by card as a team, talking about them. What's this? What's this? This is similar to this. And every card had a number, and they sorted them and said, these are dupes. These aren't needed. Get rid of these, and ordered and sorted everything. At the end of this, and we did a daily scrum because everybody had budget constraints and challenges and timing challenges because it was kind of a quick turnaround to make the trip. So the folks that couldn't make it, we did every half day, so about every 4 hours, we did a scrum update. What have we done, what are we going to do, and what's in our way? So that, and we do a phone call. Anybody that wanted to call in could get an update of what was going on our day and a half at NC State. So that worked well. That worked pretty well to try and keep everybody in the loop and involved as we started through this process. We ended up with a 77% reduction in the product backlog. So we got rid of 77% of the user stories and got down to a set that was a lot more manageable. But we weren't done, we didn't finish everything, and we still needed to prioritize, and we still need more information about the backlog. So we turned around and went to Quali Days, and we actually took the user stories, somebody on Kristen's team updated the spreadsheets, FedEx the user stories to us while we all headed to the other coast, to San Diego, to Quali Days. So we took those user stories, kind of capitalized on the functional council members being together, and used that time to go through and make deeper decisions on what's really important. And we did a lot of the must-haves, should-haves work there, so that we had the functional council level, kind of director level groups come together and we're able to make those decisions. At the end of that workshop, we had we were down to 271 user stories. And we had started prioritizing. We were working through the priorities and started doing dots. The one downside, so the NCSU workshop, we had a small group of folks, it worked well, really easy to go. The functional council group was a larger group of people. So the lessons learned in that was trying to keep everybody involved and everybody engaged in the activities was a little more challenging. And we also didn't give everybody a whole lot of heads up on, here's what you're going to be doing for a day and a half. So there were some challenges with that. So we learned from that, and we went to DC and decided we'd do the same thing, but give everybody a heads up, like, here's what we're going to do. There was a conference that most of the folks were going to in DC from the Functional Council. So we piggybacked on that conference, picked a Sunday, and headed to DC. And I got to give kudos to Robert on the most amazing meetings. So if anywhere in this country, I believe that Robert can find you a room that, or a restaurant or a reservation or anything you need. The man is amazing. So we had this awesome room in DC that was same thing. It had whiteboards and windows and rolling tables and everything. So we came, went in on a Sunday and just had whoever was able to make it, whoever could come, and did the final work. So we did more dots, we did more, all right, and by that point, everything was starting to percolate to, all right, it just started to make sense. What is the product roadmap and what needs to be done? And it was from all those conversations and that FaceTime that we were then able to say, okay, here's how it needs to happen. We know that there's a dependency on finance, we know all these different things, so this is what makes sense, this is what's important. And really able to say, okay, now we're ready for that next step. Now we're ready to dive deep into this certain area and start doing functional specs so that we're ready for the developers. And that's where Tim's going to tell you more about that area.
Thanks, Christine. So once we had user stories in place and we had deduped the user stories and prioritized them, we actually needed to write functional specifications so the programmers could get to work. And unlike this humorous comic strip, it really does take a lot of documentation and it does take a lot of planning. But there's still room for good old complaining about what we're doing. That's never going to be the case. So we built our early functional specification teams around the functional council members who had been, you know, focused on the prioritization of the user stories. We felt that not only did they have the knowledge of the priorities that we had just gone through, but they also had the functional leadership to be able to kind of focus on the areas that they're focusing on and in their internal libraries. So we asked one or two functional council members to lead a group of subject matter experts from our libraries, the people who are really doing the day-to-day work, to come together and think outside the box a little bit, talk about what you're supposed to be doing in your libraries, what you're currently doing, what you wish you could do if your current system would actually do it for you, as well as what you think is going to happen in the future. And kind of planning out those 3 to 5 years. Okay, we might be doing this for the next 6 months, but we're expecting a change, so we're going to need to have a little bit of different workflow. But as expected, subject matter experts aren't necessarily the right people to write documents for developers. They're doing the nitty-gritty day-to-day, and it does get a bit cyclical. What do you want us to accomplish? Well, I want you to tell us what the software is going to do. Well, I need to know what you want to accomplish so I can design the software. And we really needed to figure out a better system than putting all the emphasis on the subject matter experts. Yes, they know what they do day-to-day, they know what they need to do, but they aren't necessarily the ones to communicate that with to the developers. So on my team, what I focused on trying to do was allow the subject matter experts to tell their story. Give me a narrative of what you do that would meet this user story that we're working on. And we had very specific, simple user stories that had, you know, a noun, a person, and an action. And out of those narratives, I would build a pseudo code outline like this, or some sort of bullet point outline that I could go back to them and say, does this represent step by step what you just told me? And we would iteratively go through that process to make sure that we had it right. Out of the outlines, then we would build a workflow diagram so that pictorially we could represent what we had just discussed in the narrative, in the outline, and this we could give to a developer and they can sort of wrap their mind around it and say, okay, I've got decision points here. I have action points. I have actors I have to consider. I have some data storage elements that we have to consider. And so both a subject matter expert could look at this diagram and say, okay, I'm that actor right there. I do that step. I make that decision. I click save. I click edit. I need to do this thing. It has to be approved by somebody else. I click send to that person. And we were able to break down the process fairly well so that we could, you know, get these documents written. But unfortunately, we still had a bottleneck of authority. As was described previously, we had the functional council working on user stories and deduping them and prioritizing them. We had the developers who were waiting for documents to write code with, and we had the core team that we'd hired full-time to be the intermediary between the functional council, who's volunteer, and the developers who we've contracted. And unfortunately, as you can see from this document, the core team ended up being the go-to or the middleman for everybody, between the developers and the spec teams, between the developers and the functional council. And so they were really under-resourced for this task. It wasn't, while they had the skill set to kind of work through this process, we were just hitting them with too many things at one time. So we decided that because we had to focus on scope and focus on our roadmap and prioritization, so we needed to reorganize our human teams, our resource teams, to work around scope a little more easily. And so we essentially did a recalibration of our scope, and we focused on how we can make it more agile, more individual to the user story, and how we could break it down so the core team wasn't the only team that was responsible for delivering documents to the programmers, but the SMEs weren't the answer for that. So we did a few, we added a few elements to our structure. First, as a functional council, we decided that we needed to add a vice chair for the functional council. Essentially, relieving Mike of being the sole product owner in the Agile model, and giving him a backup, allowing another voice in there, and also to be able to split those responsibilities. So we removed any bottleneck, or we tried to remove as much bottleneck as we could from that process of Mike being the sole product owner. We then created a Scope Tiger team, which was a small team of four individuals, myself, Mike, and two other functional council members, who could work on the roadmap and make the decisions about scope that we needed to make from a prioritization in a cyclical manner. We could then present that decision back to the functional council for confirmation. If there was dispute, discussion, disagreement, then we could go back as the Tiger team and try to make a quicker decision, try to iron out some of the wrinkles. And then we created a template of what a Tiger team would look like for all the subject areas that could be that intermediary for the core team and make those decisions on the spot in a short turnaround, that the core team really kept going back to the subject matter experts and say, we need a decision. Do you want this or do you want that? Is workflow A better for you? Is that meet your 80% rule? Or does workflow B meet it because you know it's going to change in the future? And we wanted to create an agile team, a team to make those decisions more easily. So the template for that team was we had, again, a functional council member who knew the prioritization from the scope team, could speak to that authoritatively based on discussions that we've been having between the functional council and the scope team. We had a technical council member who was doing technical research along the way, deciding how we could integrate on our campuses, what technologies we should be using, and they could answer that question from a technology perspective. Does this spec meet the goals from a technology perspective? And then we added an analyst role, which sometimes was a core team member, sometimes was a technical council member, or sometimes it was another person on the staff at a partner institution that was essentially volunteered to be that position. So I think we have four analysts right now that are sort of, we basically have signed, you know, the rights, you know, certain percentage of time to the Olay project, and the partners have contributed that on a, you know, as an FTE equivalent. So the resulting workflow then became more cyclical and became repetitive and became iterative. So we could go through the process and we know exactly where the decision had to be made if there was, when the decision came up. So we had the functional council leadership, which is Mike and I, working with the core team to create a high level roadmap and to make suggestions about where we needed to go based on what the developers were telling us of their timeline, what roadblocks they were foreseeing or that they had in front of them, as well as what do we expect to deliver in specifications over the next iteration. The Scope Tiger team then refined those, delivered a roadmap to the functional council for approval. The functional council then, based on that roadmap, would commission Tiger teams as an as-needed basis to do the work in those smaller functional areas. The Tiger teams then would work with the SMEs, and they would be the ones who helped the SMEs tell their story, design their story in a workflow, and then work with the core team to build those specs that they could deliver. So the core team was always still in the process fairly daily, but they didn't have all of the responsibility of making those specifications. And so there would be a back and forth process between those two teams. The core team then could deliver that to the developer, and they could basically work just with the developers on what was happening. They could go back to the SMEs for some specification discussion as needed, but they didn't have that hurdle all the time of having to expect the subject matter experts to know how to represent that technically. And then finally, the core team would come back to leadership. We would discuss what's happening with the active specs. We would talk about what's in development, what's coming down the pike, and we can make decisions as needed on what was the priority if we had to make new prioritizations. So out of that process, we were able then to create a quarterly development cycle. And so while Agile often works best in 2 to 6 week increments, we stretched it out to a quarter to try to make sure that we had a release every quarter as close as we could in a calendar year based on different events that were going on. And so this is a map of what each team is doing within the quarterly cycle. So we have the scope team that's constantly looking at the scope, refining the roadmap, editing it based on roadblocks we may have in the road, dependencies that we need that aren't quite ready, and also looking in the future about how do we plan for specs in the future. The Tiger teams are working on it as needed, so while there's only one row for Tiger teams, there will be three, four, five, six Tiger teams working simultaneously, some dropping off because their specs are done and their priorities don't come back until another quarter, but there's constantly Tiger teams working. And then we have this functional specification teams that are still built of the SMEs, wonderful volunteers who really have the rich knowledge of what the library does in day to day, what they need to do, what's missing. And so they're working on the early part of the quarter, starting up the team, writing those narratives, discussing their stories, throwing out exceptions that they see on a day-to-day that's not handled. And then they come back after a break and then do testing and acceptance of what the developers have been actually coding based on their stories. And then the core team is working behind the scenes all the time, helping to start up those functional spec teams, doing technical review, preparation for coding, and also helping the spec teams then do the testing and kind of working through them, and then ultimately doing the integration of the code into the module. And you can see here what the developers are doing, waiting for the reviews of the technical documents, doing a sprint coding on their own agile cycle, and then also doing integration at the end of the quarter. So as of November, at Qali Days, we'll be releasing 0.3 release, which is our first public release of Qali OLE. It's going to be focusing on the features of select and acquire. We're going to show how we can leverage the core modules of the Qali financial system to do our library business workflow, doing requisitions, ordering, invoicing, and essentially and preparing for us to do a data flow, a bidirectional data flow with our campus ERP systems, so that we don't have to have a full financial system running for the libraries, but we can leverage what we're already using on the enterprise. We're using Qali Rice as a middleware and workflow engine for all the back-end processing, for the supply chain automation, for order ingests, record ingests, and so that's another Qali project that's supporting our efforts. We're also going to be doing a proof of concept of our Describe module, which is going to be using the Apache Jackrabbit document repository. This repository allows us to support multiple data formats for description records, which most library systems haven't been able to do very easily. It creates faceted search and retrieval for these documents, and then now we can relate documents of different formats together where there are common data elements. And we're going to show that we have an initial scale of 10 million records that we can load into, 5 million bibliographic records, 5 million item records, and show what that will look like, how quickly the search and retrieval actually will function, and give a proof of concept for the area. And finally, we're going to be also showing some searching and retrieval functions of the metadata that we have in the facets, as well as transactional metadata that we're using on the financial side. So that concludes our presentation right now. We'd like to take some questions. And because we have an online audience, we ask if you do have questions, if you come to the microphone so that the folks online can actually hear what you're asking as well. So thank you.
So there was a question from out online, I think, or at least somebody was tweeting it. They were wondering if the presenters are using traditional project management development terms in order to better convey the topics to, you know, the groups, I guess, that we're working with. That's kind of what they're talking about. And then there was a follow-on to that was, it was kind of a comment, but it said, it sounds like the functional council members served as product owners pulling in the required SMEs, and is that how we kind of viewed it?
Sure. Yeah, I think that the functional council ended up being those proxy product owners with the chair representing kind of the more persistent one with the core team. So when Tim talks about relieving me of some of these responsibilities, it became pretty intense because the core team has lots of questions as the agile proxies with the developer for the product owner. So just, you know, the demands on my time became a little too great. At one point, we had scheduled every Friday all day long to be with them, and that just didn't work with my day job. So. Bringing Tim on has been really helpful that way. The innovation of the Tiger teams, though, also allowed us to spread out that product owner responsibilities to other members of the functional council. And then as a council, we come together and discuss what's happening within the Tiger teams and really align our priorities so that projects aren't going off in different directions.
I think that also the relationship that the functional team, functional council has with those Tiger teams is helpful because there's a trust relationship there of the functional council members who are leading those Tiger teams, knowing what the ultimate goal is of the functional council, and essentially then bringing back any sort of questions or possible disagreements that the partners may have about what functionality needs to be prioritized. And that way it actually limits some of the bottleneck of decisions that the entire council has to make because they've already laid the groundwork for that. Any other questions?
There is another tweeted question. Is there any from the audience, though? All right, then I'll ask you this one. Could you talk a little bit more about next steps, timeline over the next year for both the project and the partners? Well, the thing to talk about there was we did have a session yesterday that talked a lot about that. But I'm sure Mike can talk for just a second about that.
Sure. So we're heading to Kuali Days next month. Where we'll do our 0.3 release, but also coincident with that release is the release of the roadmap. It'll be a public document that allows you to drill into from the high level of sort of understanding, Tim, if you can go back one,
sure.
Sort of the high level of these kinds of bullet points into intermediate levels that really describe what we mean by these kinds of things and why these are important to this release, and all the way down into the JIRA stories themselves, and we're using JIRA to organize our project and to work with the developers directly. So you'd be able to see how the user stories are lining up with the pieces of functionality that are being developed, and how those line up with the high-level deliverables that we're looking for in each release. Going forward, we hope to have this release in November, and then we're going to have a release next March. And then we'll have our 1.0 release in June or July of 2012. Going further beyond that, the partnership will continue to work on the software and develop it and hopefully stick to those quarterly releases.
And, we have one question from the audience. Probably that's all we have time for.
Okay. I was just wondering with the decision to use Agile, did you have were any of your developers already skilled in using that methodology, or was it pretty new to most everyone? And did you find with such a large team that you kind of had to create a bit of a hybrid approach because you're still wanting to project those larger timelines for executives and folks to see?
Sure. Yeah, the HTC Global Services that was awarded the contract for development did have experience with Agile, and so that was a natural progression for them to be able to do their work, their development and their development cycles. I'd say that it's safe to say from the functional council that we did not have much experience. I happened to use it at Lehigh, but there it's not to say that most of the partners probably did not use Agile on their campuses, so that was fairly new to them. So it was a hybrid approach indeed, especially in the beginning as we're trying to go through the user stories and deduplicate them to organize them. But now that we're moving forward, we have most of that work settled. We're able to be able to focus on the Agile process. So.
I would say also, just as follow on to that, that we bent Agile. I don't think we broke it. but the challenges that we faced of communication and distance, and the functional council, I will say, is made up of really busy people. And sticking to a weekly 2-hour meeting plus all of the work that has to happen in between and the consultations that go on is quite challenging for everyone. So we needed to find ways to deal with that, to take people who had very busy schedules and help them help the project move forward. And I think the Tiger teams have really been a good innovation for us in that sense. I mean, in terms of things that that we've learned going into this, I mean, one of them is that you need constantly to be looking for where those bottlenecks are and leave your ego at the door, really, and be prepared to say, okay, this isn't about me and what I know and what I need out of this project, but what's good for the project. and be ready to change up and in an agile way redeploy your resources. And really to focus on your velocity is the important thing is to get specifications into the coder's hands so they can develop code so that you can get the code back and understand whether your product is moving forward or not.
All right, thanks so much, everybody. Have a great EDUCAUSE.